Austin, welcome to the payment show.
Hello, hello, how are you, man?
I was okay until an hour ago. So I'm in Italy on vacation, and my low-cost airline cancelled the flight, which isn't a problem. They sent a message saying, rebook, here's the link, which I did, and it was 7:30 tomorrow, I thought. It was actually today, i.e. now. And they've done the UX very sneakily so that a lot of people make that mistake. But
Oh, wow,
the only way
sucks.
to get to the airport was to teleport there, right?
Yeah.
So I basically just set fire to £100.
Well, we have what's it called? No air conditioning in our office for the last 3 days. So you put 100 and people in the office with no air conditioning when it's mid to high 80s, and you have a lot of fans going on and a lot of trying to get people not to be so irritated also damn much right now. So we're dealing with that. But so if I break a sweat, don't worry, I'm not working out and I'm not going through anything. I just it's just It's pretty toasty here today.
Well, hopefully your HVAC guy is not too far away soon.
Well, supposedly tomorrow, latest Monday. So we will see. But until then, like you kind of said, life is life. What are you going to do? So it is what it is.
That's it. Absolutely. Well, it's a real pleasure to have you on. I've been doing a lot of research on your company to prepare for the conversation. I'll give you a quick intro. So, Austin, you're the founder of VisiPay. Is that how you pronounce it? Or VisiPay?
VisiPay, you got the first time around. Yep,
Okay,
VisiPay. Yep.
VisiPay. And so you help small to mid-sized businesses lower their payment processing costs, mainly through transparent pricing. I think it wouldn't be a surprise to anyone listening that the payment processing costs are very high for businesses, especially small businesses. But I wanted to sort of kick off with some stats to set the scene. So credit cards especially could make up 80% of a business's sales. And on average, if you've got a 3% processing fee, that can be quite a high proportion of their profits, especially in grocery, where margins are very low. And sometimes, such as grocery, they can even be losing money on transactions. I mean, especially in the States where companies like Kroger have even stopped accepting either Visa or MasterCard, one of
Yeah.
them in the past, in a sort of a protest almost. And Amazon threatened Visa last year as well. So clearly, behind the scenes, a lot of people are unhappy, whether companies are big or small. And yeah, it'd be great to understand, how VisiPay came about initially and why you're helping in this area.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this. I've been in the business for close to 20 years, so almost 2 decades coming around the corner here. So this industry is when you learn the industry when you're brand new, especially 20 years ago, you know what you're taught until you really dig deep and learn about it, right? So the problem was guys like me in my 20s in this business because I didn't know the things that we're doing were things that now today at my age, at 38 and being in the business as long as I have, I realized that that's not the way I want to do business, nor do I think that small business owners deserve to have that mindset. And our focus strictly goes to, you're right, small to mid-sized businesses, but we even go a little one step further, one step deeper with it. We focus on rural America. So when you're mentioning things like 3%, in rural America, their percentages could be 3 to 5%. And then if you go to like metropolitan, like Chicago or New York or Dallas or San Francisco, it's not 3%. Their effective rate, I would say 80% or 90% of people that are in downtown or in those areas, they're not even close to 3%. They're probably more of effective rates anywhere between 2 to 2.5%, right? Because they, number one, they have more population, they have more processing volume and more transactions, right? And the big dogs out there that are, have tons of outside investments, which we were bootstrapped from the beginning until today still. But you think about the big dogs out there that, I use these names because they're good products like Toast. They're a great product for that market. Well, they're not going to go to rural America because they need the high processing volume. They need the transactions. They need the population to get what they need as an organization to pay the bills, right? To a certain extent. Now, with us, we're opposite. So while everyone is running to big towns, which most people are taught to do that, and most big companies are doing, we're running to the small towns, the towns that we feel that are being left behind. The towns that, they have dial-up internet still, but we could put, people on the damn moon for Christ's sakes, right? So, the technology is passing them by, and it's not because they don't want to be part of what a metropolitan has or a big city has. It's because it's the fear factor of the unknown. So what they do is they stay with who they have been with for years. And most companies in our business, unfortunately, they will gouge accordingly to make sure they make theirs. And so rates are going up sometimes once, twice, three times a year for these small business owners. Very minuscule, but it adds up over years, right? Two, three, four, five, 6 years, if they're with them that long. Annual fees crush them. So they're like, well, I don't want to fix what's not broken. If I go to a big, you know, product, I don't want to pay the software fees. I don't want to pay for the product, which is a, you know, high cost. I don't want to be locked into a contract. And it's too robust for me. I'm a small town of 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 people. I don't need the robustity behind it and complexity that could cause something that, you know, too much time to learn. So they stick with what they're with and they get creamed for doing it, right? And most of these towns are passing their businesses on to the next generation or their family members as, you know, Billy or, you know, Julie get older, they pass it down to their kids or their grandkids, whatever it may be. So the new generation coming in are maybe open to that, but they still don't want to cross that bridge. But I believe that rural America is the most underserved, most taken advantage of inside the states. And I think technology is passing them by. So how do we make a difference? How does VisiPay make a difference? Well, we have boots on the ground that go to these locations to help these owners. When we're switching them over or doing cost analysis, we find out they are getting taken advantage of just like we thought. So while everyone's running for the hills to the big dogs, we're going deep in these caves to find these rural American businesses that need the most help. And by the way, there's millions upon millions of businesses. I mean, they say over 50% of businesses across the United States are owned or you work for a small business owner. And then that plays a big part in rural America. So with our options that we give them and give them a simplistic technology to level them up, think about like leveling someone up from like a beeper to a flip phone, from a flip phone to a smartphone, right? They're still in like the flip phone stage, some of these businesses. And how do we change that narrative? So we will grow slower than everyone else. We will grow naturally as an organization, you know, slower when it comes down to hiring and build out of technology and stuff. These were bootstrapped because they have lower volume in those areas too, right? So that also plays a part in why most people don't want to, you know, play with those small rural American businesses. So just kind of a nutshell. Hopefully that answers that question pretty thoroughly, it sounds like. So,
yeah, I didn't realize that you had that specific focus in the rural area. I mean, from what I read into your company, it was the small and medium businesses, which obviously is great. But that's really interesting to hear that you focused, because in aggregate, it's still a lot of business.
Yeah, the potential. There's tons of small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I move into how you offer the savings to businesses, I wanted to step back to what you said earlier, that a lot of these areas don't have high-speed internet broadband. And so how do you deliver it? Does it not really matter that they may have slower connectivity for your solution?
Now, as obviously the decades have passed, more and more have the ability to have Wi-Fi. You know, they can bring a Verizon hotspot, et cetera. So the cell phone service can help kind of help them with that and level up. Doesn't mean we don't come across people that have dial-up internet still, that we have to provide them a technology that still allows that to happen, but still also levels them up, which that's, we have that. So it's not 80% have dial-up, but it's still a percentage we run into because these rural American areas still are not up to speed. But a lot of them have, you know, high-speed internet. A lot of them have the ability to do hotspots and Wi-Fi, so our technology can work, you know, and very efficiently. But we still have the ability to do dial-up internet as well if needs be. You know, back in the day when, you know, when I was going door to door, I mean, we used to have something called, you know, back in the day it was called dial pace. You literally, since people didn't have like good connections at all, and it was dial up, they would just call a phone number and they would run their credit card through the phone number. And that's how they ran transactions back in the day. Or those old school knuckle busters, they would, you know, imprint the credit card, and some of them used to bring it to the bank and process it that way. And I mean, there was no receipt printer. They used to print out the full receipt, the full credit card number on the receipts. Like, times have changed. Technology has changed. But we just don't want to leave them behind. That's all.
My understanding is that the main ways you help businesses is three ways. So locking in the processing fees so that they don't fluctuate. Secondly is increasing the display prices by a certain fee amount. And then thirdly is offering a cash discount for non-paying card customers. So first of all, sort of, is that a good way to sum up your offerings, or is there more I need to add? And then we can talk about the three or four solutions that you offer in terms of your programs.
Well, yeah, so the three, I guess the programs and what you said kind of go hand in hand, right? So one of the programs, which you mentioned, the first one is, we call it interchange plus pricing, okay? The second one is hybrid, which is a surcharging program. And then the third one is the cash discount program. We call it cash discount 2.0. And we're about to launch a new product line that allows dual pricing. So to explain each program, because that's probably, it's going to bleed, the questions bleed together, in my opinion. Is so interchange plus pricing, right? So interchange, in my mind, I don't care if you're a Walmart all the way to the small guy, it's interchange is cost of cards from the issuing banks, the credit card companies, Visa, MasterCard, the whole works, assessments, dues and assessments, all kind of lumped in. That's a no matter what you're paying, okay? No matter who you are. And then there is markup, right? So there's a basis point markup and a cents per transaction markup, which is usually profit for that organization that is like us, right? We are one of the few, if not only, company in the nation. And we deal with a lot of dinosaurs that have been around forever and a lot of new upcoming companies, but we're probably one of the few, if not, like I said, the only. We will cap and regulate our sales force on what they can charge in the field. In the industry, it's known to allow you to do whatever the hell you want. And we don't want that to happen. So we want to set a tone that we won't allow what has been going on for 2 decades. We want to control it because if we control it, it allows that merchant to control what's going on within their businesses. So we're kind of setting that narrative with our whole sales force, boots on the ground or in-house. So that's interchange plus pricing. Hybrid is surcharging. So that is, there is actually rules and regulations per state on this. And majority of United States, of the 50 states, allow it. There's about a handful of states that don't allow it. Basically, you walk into a location, and if you use a debit card, you have no fee as a consumer. If you walk in with a credit card, they usually will have a fee that's now capped as of April 15th at 3%. Okay. So if you buy $100 is worth of product, you use a credit card, it's 103. And but it's clearly stated at the register, clearly stated when you walk in the door. And then if you use a debit card, it's $100. Okay. So that's enables probably 40, 50, sometimes 60% savings for a small business owner. Thirdly is cash discount. We call it 2.0. So a lot of people, we work with them to include a lot of business owners. They're so worried about the products they're buying. Hey, I buy this at cost. I got to mark it up at this. That's how they're focused on making profit, right? And I got to cover labor costs, electricity, you name whatever costs they have. They got to cover. So they put that in their pricing. Most of them fail to include processing fees in their pricing, which is, again, in rural America, 3 to 5% sometimes. So we work with them and even help them with menus or reprice their menus. So that burrito that used to be $10, we help them make it $10.40 so they get ahead of the problem. So if someone is using a credit card, they're paying $10.40, but they see it on the menu. So it's not a surprise. That's the price you see, the price you pay. And then if you use cash, you pay $10. So that owner now, they get $10 for every single time someone buys that burrito. In the past, it would be, I use cash, you get $10. I use a credit card, I'll get $9.70, right? Well, now we're helping them get ahead of the problem and always be ahead of the problem instead of behind it. It takes a little extra work, but if we work with them to quote 4% more or include the fees into their pricing on menus and SKU items around the stores, that allows them to now get what they deserve for that product that they're trying to sell. Now, it's not meant for everyone. You can't walk into a convenience store that has 4,000 SKUs and do it. That's not easy for them. So that might not be a program for them. But an auto repair shop, it's easy. For a small restaurant, it's easy because the menu is usually one page or 2 pages tops, right? Or a deli that has a food menu, on the wall, you could change those pricing. But it's never allowing the price at the register to go up like surcharging does, right? You increase the fee, you get a fee. We just include in the pricing. So that's our cash discount 2.0. And we've done really well with that and helped a lot of clients save millions of dollars over the years. Lastly, a dual pricing. I'm not sure if it's you have this in your particular area, but in the United States, it's been dominant for years. If you ever go past a gas station, especially some of the ones in outer towns or maybe getting into a metropolitan, it will say, hey, our regular price is this and our cash price is this. It will have it on their sign, right? Gas station's been doing it forever. The card brands back them up. They allow them to do it. So now we're about to launch a product line that allows a client that may not want to do the surcharging route, but they want to make sure that all cards are covered. They'll have a dual pricing model, which shows the regular price and the cash price on menus, labels, and everything. So when you walk in the location, you actually see that. Or if you're an auto repair shop, you quote two prices, regular price, cash price. Now, some people will say, well, well, why don't you just do 2.0 if you're just going to raise the prices anyways? And there's a simple reason. Is number one, we have to stay competitive. A lot of people are pushing that as an agenda in our market compared to gas stations. So people naturally, perception is reality. Oh, that looks cool. I want to do that. So they're sold on it. And a lot of people are sold on showcasing, just like a surcharging program, because some of them have done it. So they want to showcase and they feel it's more transparent to show both. And reality is both ways work well for whatever type of owner you are, because they're emotionally drawn to one way or the other, depending on how they want to run their organization. And they should have choice. They should not be just put in a pigeonhole and not have choice. So the dual pricing and the cash discount eliminate almost up to 100% of what they pay for processing fees. So now the 3 to 5% turns into zero. While the hybrid program is surcharging, they basically cut it almost in half. And then the interchange program that we have, their effective rates are never over 3%. They're always under 3% based on how we cap and regulate that, unless American Express is the dominant card type, which is a little bit higher card processing cost. So those are our four programs in a nutshell. Hopefully that made sense to you.
I want to just dig deeper again on the, not even deeper, maybe I'm the one here that's not too smart. If I'm a business and I've got these processing fees, I can have a cash price. I mean, I've seen this in small shops. Oh, this is the cash price and this is the card price. Maybe I'm just not clear why you have an actual pricing package for that. Sorry, I'm missing something here. Why does it have to be an offering? Why isn't it just I can do that myself to offer two prices?
Well, that's actually a great question, because that's probably the exact question we get as the most biggest objection in the sales field. Well, there's a couple reasons. Is number one, if you're a pizza shop, you probably know how to make a great pizza. And that's why I don't make them at my house. I go to your location, I eat it, right? Well, and same thing with us. We're a payment processing company. We have technology, they don't. We're allowed to peel off that every single transaction through our technology. We allow them to upload inventory that automatically increases pricing for them. And reality is, if they're increasing their own pricing, they're just basically paying more processing fees if they're allowing themselves to pay the fee itself. What we're doing is we're coming in with a technology that makes it easier for them to do the price increasing accordingly. And number two is we have the technology to peel off the exact amount every single transaction when they don't do that daily, nor will they ever do that, because they don't have someone that's fully focused on that. And at the end of the year, there's a couple caveats. You know, and I'm not a tax professional, so don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty damn sure I'm right, because that's why we promote it this way. If you do it yourself and you increase your prices yourself at the end of the year, let's say you did 100,000, you increase your pricing by 4,000. Just simple math. That means at the end of the year, it's going to show a revenue of 104,000, right? And your processing fees, let's say it was 3% or whatever it may be, or 2.5 if you're in a bigger market, right? Well, that's the offset, right? So you increase the 4,000, now it's $2,500 maybe. With us, we are able to basically showcase, hey, revenue is this, and you actually pay back that exact amount, therefore it washes accordingly, right? So doing it themselves is like the individual trying to go to make their own pizza, like the favorite pizza shop they have. You can't do it because they have the recipe and the means to do it. The same thing with us is we have the technology that builds value that allows them to actually do it properly, number one, because doing it properly is key, because if the states or, federal get involved and you're doing it wrong, or the card brands, look at it and you're doing it incorrectly by just saying, hey, yeah, I'm just going to add a fee every time the transaction happens. Who cares what everyone says, or whatever it may be, or just increase my pricing. If you're doing it incorrectly, you could cause yourself harm and problems. But allowing a company like us to use our technology to do this for you, that's where we create value. And doing it yourself sounds awesome, but it's not as great. It's not good when you don't know the rules and regulations behind it.
Okay, so I didn't realize the regulation bit. Okay, so that was the key piece that was missing for me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, anyone and a mom could raise if you wanted to add a fee to anything you wanted to, of course, you as the owner, you're going to feel like, hey, yeah, I could do it myself. I don't need you guys for it. Well, yeah, you actually do. You need the technology that actually showcases that there is an increase, number one. You need signage. You need to properly do it. You need to follow state and federal law, car brand regulations. And if you include it into your pricing, there's not a regulation behind it. It's the technology piece behind it that they can't do themselves. So there's two different ways of looking at our surcharging program and our cash discount / dual pricing program.
Some small businesses will have an e-commerce side as well. You offer a whole bunch of solutions in terms of apps, terminals, POS, and mobile as well. And that all syncs, your technology effectively syncs to everything, right?
Yeah, so we have, you know, we have a product line that, you know, several product lines that we have to enable them to do, like, let's say, you know, like use COVID, for example. That was kind of a probably a technology fast forward probably 3 years in advance of 1 year just because people couldn't go to locations, right? So you're able to go online and, you know, make an order and then it pushes to the location, then we, you know, and pay accordingly. And you can even pay online. But everything syncs together with the technology that we provide that allows them to do online sales if needs be. And believe it or not, more rural American businesses don't have the ability or nor want the online because they're only talking to their market. Now, if they have like a consignment shop or, you know, sell candles or whatever, that might be broader, obviously, across the United States because they're selling anywhere because they're shipping, right? So we have the ability to do all those things, but we do mainly a card present. So 97% of our transactions out of 32 million transactions last year were all swiped. You literally were at a location swiping it, right? And the 3% or higher was someone calling in because they're giving you your credit card number. They're doing it online. And or let's say something went down, the card can't be read because this, you know, the chip is messed up, whatever, they have the key in the device, right? That's called a key in a transaction. And you know, less than, you know, between 3 to 5% of our transactions last year were e-commerce or keyed in transactions because usually that's not a main focus for us, but we have the ability to connect the dots for them if needs be.
Okay. On a bit of a tangent, I guess most of your customers come from your organization doing outbound because I'm assuming most of these businesses are run by older folks if they haven't handed them down to their family yet, and so they don't necessarily know where to go to save money. Would that be a correct assumption?
I mean, I think nowadays, you know, Google is a pretty good source to, you know, search credit card processing companies and look it up and find one that you like accordingly. So, I think we're found there a lot. And then once a lot of small business owners in those communities find out that, you know, our focus is specifically their area, I think that helps us get some inbound as well through our marketing efforts that we have. So we get inbound sales as well. But they can go online and find it. They'll find a million that will pop up. I don't care if it's the United States or overseas. It doesn't really matter. I mean, everyone and their mom pops up on Google search. They're just going to find the one that, you know, talks to them more. And honestly, I always recommend, even if they don't go with us, go with a company that has a disrupting, you know, an industry. It does not always have to be around technology, although we're building technology here. It also could be how you know, represent or run your organization within that industry that can also disrupt it, right? And I think that, you know, going online and doing simple research on the companies you're doing business with, you know, people's voices matter, right? So having great reviews and great reputation, now you're going to have the one-offs naturally in any business that, you know, go on a tangent and there was a miscommunication or just a bad experience, and you're going to get those, which we are not perfect. We have those as well. But I would say 98% is on the good terms because we do practice 30 second less hold times. We do practice having a human connection when you call someone here, right in the States, right in their backyard. We do promote boots on the ground with live bodies over 90% of the time anyways, right? So we have things that they want and need. And believe it or not, people don't want to go to an online chatbot sometimes in these areas. They want to talk to a human being. You know, they want to talk to someone that actually they can hear them fucking breathe on the phone, right? They want to actually have that. And I think we're going away from that, but that probably would make sense to someone that's in a metropolitan that their whole life is fast paced, but not someone that is a little bit more old school that still needs to get up to that level that doesn't want to send an email and wait 24 hours for a response. They don't want to send a go on a chat and talk to someone that who knows who they're talking to. They want to be able to go and make a phone call and have a conversation or have a live body help them out like we do with our 1099 or W-2 boots on the ground channel. So
Yeah. I did want to ask how MasterCard and Visa and the card providers are dealing with two-pronged side, really. First, organizations like yours, and also the regulation side, because in the EU and various other countries are trying to tackle the processing fees and gouging side of things. You know, everyone's after them, even like I said, Amazon earlier last year was going after Visa. As they're being attacked from all sides, are they starting to maybe be a little bit more, how should I put it? Just working a bit more proactively instead of trying to just fight everything off all the time?
You know, hey, Visa and the card brands, I compare them to like think about like playing a sport. Think about hockey. I use hockey as a prime example, okay? As if I'm in the NHL and you and I are on the ice together and you decide to beat my ass or I do the same thing to you, you and I don't go to jail. They just let us fight it out and they break it up, right? And but within the league, they allow that, right? Now, if you and I took the same exact fight outside in the parking lot, we go to jail because now that's a state law and that's federal probably too, right? So, but in our world, we're playing within the rules and regulations of the card brands, right? We're not, they don't, no one cares when it comes to law per se, right? We want to, they fight, they we have to follow the card brands. That's an agreement we signed with. Even companies like us sign an agreement with them. A small business owner signed an agreement technically with them. But they use guys like us, or you know, companies like us, to be the middleman. So it's not just Visa and it's us blended. It's the card brands, right? Then you have sponsoring banks, and you got big companies like to authorize transactions like Fiserv and all these other big global payments, et cetera, to kind of have the rails. And then you have organizations like us that are the face, if you would, of the business. So when they bark down orders from the top, they of you better if you don't follow this regulation, you're going to get fined or this or that. This it has to go through a couple channels before it even hits my doorstep. And then if it hits my doorstep, then I got to hit the doorstep of the small business owner. But the proactiveness for them and playing within their rules and regulations is like for surcharging, for example, they just changed it to 3% as a cap and throughout the United States, the card brands do, right? And we have to follow that rule. Now, people can fight the you know,
So,
free
sorry,
speech
what?
and Durbin
Explain
Amendment,
what
all
that
those things
is.
they have.
Explain what that is, that specific example.
So on April 15th of this year, they capped and regulated what you can charge on a credit card transaction if you're doing a surcharging program. So like the we talked about the hybrid program we have, you can't charge on debit, which is not allowed. That's part of the rules and regulations when you're implementing a surcharging program. But you can charge at 1.4%. They just lowered that to 3%. That a small business owner can charge, right? And they will fine if they get multiple attempts, they will fine the company, you know, our sponsoring banks, et cetera. Then they'll fine us the same amount, and then we have to pass that down if we can't get them to do the right thing, right? So it's a forever big fight for the card brands, right? But naturally, they don't want to deter you or I from using our cards, right? And they don't want to deter small business owners from not wanting to use it, like you mentioned the Kroger example, right? They're doing everything in their power, but I don't know. I don't think it's ever a winning battle. I think they're gonna be loved sometimes. They're gonna be hate sometimes. I love because they got credit cards, right? That you can enable to put stuff on credit and run credit cards. They're gonna be loved from a consumer standpoint, but then they're gonna be hated on the other side. You know, well, why is this business charging me now? Why is it? Why, you know, why are they using credit card processes and the reason to charge me more or increase their pricing, whatever it may be? I want to put $10,000 on my credit card because a credit card company, a card issuer gave me $10,000 limit. I'm going to pay 20, 25% interest, but I'm going to go in and bitch and moan when a small business owner wants to charge me 3%, right? So it all kind of blends together. And I think it's unfortunate for them that long term, it's a battle. But reality is without them, we wouldn't be where we're at today either, right? So it kind of goes hand in hand of we're just trying to progress and do the right thing for these small business owners and give them the tools and options that they can make the best decision for their organization within the guidelines and rules that Visa and MasterCard and all these card brands put upon us.
So I wanted to talk about next for organizations that want to get started with your solution. And you did mention earlier that you have a service where you offer to analyze a business's current cost as a complimentary service so you can advise on what's best for them. So how was the best engagement? How does that work with you guys?
Well, it's twofold, you know. So, like I said, we have boots on the ground, and then we have people that naturally find us through marketing that they call us, right? But the same concept works for both. If they provide us with their processing statement, which usually they get in the mail still, or they can go online and print it out, our organization with a human will actually go through it, dissect it, if you would, which if an agent is at location or if not, we get it back within 15, 20 minutes, if not at location within 1 hour. A lot of our competitors will get back to them in days. We get back to them fairly quickly with our support system. And then we give them the programs that they qualify for. They qualify for, you know, here's what you would save on our interchange program and how we implement it. This is what you save on our surcharging program. This is how we implement it. This is what you would save on our cash discount dual pricing program. This is how we implement it. And you as a business owner need to make choice. Now, obviously, if you're in a state that can't do surcharging, then obviously we wouldn't put it on there. There's only a handful, so there's not many. But we send it back to them. And our boots on the ground will educate them with us if needed on the phone to walk them through it. And if we don't have boots on the ground, like a live body, if you would, then we would walk through them online, via phone, via Zoom meeting, whatever is easier for that small business owner to go over to showcase to them. And by the way, sometimes we are not a good fit at all. They might be in a good position that they're with a good company. And I would say in rural America, it's a lot more rare than it is maybe in a big city, but that does happen. And sometimes it's not worth it for them nor us to do business together because they actually are set up correctly. And there is not only just savings is probably not there aggressively, but maybe the technology, they already leveled up. So why double down on them and make them change? There's no need to. And that's something that we have embedded into our people is making money in this business is very, very, very easy. Okay. Super, super easy to make money in this business, but it's very difficult to do it the right way. And that's something that we embed in our people. And that's why culture is very important to us here at our organization, which is the people that are supporting these clients, supporting these sales partners. But that's what we look for when we actually provide that cost analysis.
Okay, great. Is there anything you wanted to get across that I might have missed?
I mean, I think I always talk about this because, I think it's something that not only our staff here is very proud of, but I think I'm proud of being in the business as long as I have is, so, I'm half, Vietnamese, I'm half British Irish. My mom immigrated here from Vietnam and whatnot. And I never really noticed it, initially when I got into this business. I mean, I look like a white boy naturally, right? So I never really looked at it that way because, I speak perfectly good English, the whole works, right? So I never noticed it until years into my experiences that this industry lacks diversity and it's a good old boys club. And there's dinosaurs that have been around forever. So let me explain this is our culture. I always thought that clients were number one and small business owners. That's not actually not a true statement. They're number two. The person or people that need to be number one is the individuals that actually are in our organization. Our company culture is our number one why out of our three whys. What we have done is number one is we have 63% of our staff are minorities. 27% of our staff are women. And over 95% of our staff come from outside the fintech payment space. We don't like to hire within. We only like to hire without. So I got people that got out of college, came from corporate America. I got people that are forklift drivers, used to work in a warehouse. That doesn't matter to us, right? Because we want to bring more diverse backgrounds into the industry to change the status quo of lack of diversity when it comes to bringing in minorities within the industry. Women almost felt non-existent my first decade in the business. Now that I see a lot more companies being more proactive with that. And everyone wanted to hire guys like me that have been around for 10, 15, 20 years. So they'll have a whole staff of 100 people and they all act like me, think like me, do like me. So how do you challenge the status quo, challenge an industry that needs to be disrupted if you hire the same people that have been running it for a decade or two decades? You can't because they all think the same and all the bad habits come back no matter how your intentions are, right? And I think that's why we put our individuals here first and our focus on our people, because that in return gives you the 30-second or less hold times. That gives you a human on the other end that will go above and beyond to take care of your issue as a small business owner. And that's what's needed. I've worked at organizations where the culture was not first. The people lacked good leadership. They lacked a lot of different things, diversity, different backgrounds. And they were the most pushed when it comes to getting things done. And then the client suffered on the other end because they hated their job. You get on the phone, they're monotone, there's no relationship building. Hi, how are you, Austin? Yeah, cool. You have a problem. Cool. Anyways, what can I help you with? Who wants to talk to that person? That person's boring and they don't give a shit. You want to talk to the people that are empathetic to your situation, understand that you have a business to run and that time sensitive issues, but you get to talk to someone on the phone. You may beat the hell out of them on the phone, not us, but the client. But at the end of it, they realize they're talking to a human being, right? Not someone that actually cares instead of, cool, yell at me, be happy at me. I don't care what you're going to do. I just want you to get off my damn phone. So I don't want that thought process. And you avoid that when you bring a group of individuals together that are bought in to the vision of taking a care of rural small American businesses, but also bought in to disrupting a business that lacks those three things. And when you put different backgrounds together, man, it's like an atomic bomb. It's so fucking crazy to see these individuals excel in a business they never even knew existed, most of them, obviously, 95% of them, until now. And so let's bring those people in. Let's teach them the right way to do it and let them hold us accountable for ever doing it the wrong way. And I think that's why our culture is number one. And that's why I want to at least bring it up. I think it's very, very important because all the other shit you and I talked about, sorry, I cuss once in a while, but you know, all the other stuff you and I talked about, it means nothing, zero, if this isn't right first.
Yeah, I can see how, yeah, if people are working, have worked in, it's the same problem with politicians. They've never really had a job. They've just gone to school, gone to uni, and then become politicians, and they don't really know how to do anything. So I can understand how people having worked in different just jobs and fields would create different ways of solving problems and communicating and gelling with customers. You could have a forklift driver in your company who's speaking to a building company or something like that, right?
100%. I mean, you know, and the greatest ideas that I have seen in my, and remember, Visipay is a baby, right? We're 6 years deep. When I say baby, we're nowhere big as compared to the big dogs that are out there, right? But when you take away the 6 years, you know, within an organization, I've seen more good ideas, more creativity, more innovation in my 6 years here, not by me, okay, by the individuals here than I have previously, because the previously it was always the same thing. It was always the same thing, just recycled, do it and repeat, do it and repeat. And I think that killed a lot of people's desire to have a voice. And when your voice is smothered, you just do your job and go home. And I don't think that's okay. I think I don't want you to do your job and go home. I want you to ride a journey, allow us to ride on your journey of life, if you would, and be able to level you up accordingly, help you meet your definition of success. Your resume should not matter. I don't even look at resumes when I do interviews. I throw them in the trash the second they give it to me. I won't even know your name until I actually see you hand face to face. I have very unique methods of interviewing people because I want to get to know the real them, and that will allow me to have an idea if they actually are going to be a culture fit. Because by the way, if they're not a culture fit, they won't work here anyways.
Yeah. And actually, in terms of you being unique, I did want to bring that up. Your background of your career has been really interesting. You started off in retail, in Best Buy, GameStop, I've seen on your LinkedIn profile. Then you jumped into card payment companies, and then you're into Visipay. So quite a rapid trajectory from shop floor to being an exec almost. So how did that curve happen?
Well, it happened in a couple ways. I mean, it started probably when I was growing up. I used to, you know, I was, my mom was with a emotionally, on occasionally, physically abusive. I had a stepdad, and he literally, out of the years they're together, he worked never. My mom worked 7 days a week. So I used to have to step up to the plate. I was selling egg rolls door to door, candy door to door. I would be in telemarketing sweatshops to do telemarketing even before the age of 16. Like, I would do unique things. And then I decided to get in the work world, like the real one, right? The W-2 work world, right? You know, my mom always said, you know, be a doctor or lawyer. I never ended up being one of those, but, you know, always, you know, give your best effort, move up at a corporate place if you get there. So I started off with my true corporate job was Best Buy. And when I was at Best Buy, I actually got fired. So when I got fired from Best Buy back in the day, I went to GameStop for a handful of months. And in that interim, I used to get phone calls all the time. I happened to get calls from a company out of Santa Barbara, and they happened to be a company in the payment space. And they bugged the living crap out of me for weeks. And then finally, they got me to listen to a call and understand, but it was all commission, 100% commission. So to me, making $31,000 a year at GameStop, I thought, hey, man, I'm going to be a district manager, regional manager. $31,000 is a lot of money for me. You know, I'm going to move up the charts. So, the hell with commission, and I can't do that when they were bugging me. So finally, I took the leap of faith. I did it one day a week to try it out. And 6 weeks later, I quit my full-time job and went headfirst into the payment space as a door-to-door sales guy. Worked for that company for a little bit, did a little stint on another, and then spent the rest of my 11 years with another company that I was a number two employee. And they ended up, their valuation ended up being about $840 million when they ended up leaving and being done with the organization. And then that's when I went into starting VisiPay. So now I've been in the payment space almost my whole adult life. You know, I started when I was 19-ish, and then now I'm 38, turning 39 this year. So
That's great. One phone call changed everything. I like that. So if customers want to get in touch with you, the website is vizypay.com, VIZYPay.com. And on Twitter, you guys are at VizyPay. And I'd love to finish off by asking what's coming up later this year or next year, or any predictions you've got for the future in the payment space.
For the rest of the year, it's kind of one of those things in life that, you know, you let the outside noise be outside noise. So whatever everyone else is doing, I want to focus on a lot less than what we're doing, because we have a long way to go with, you know, really impacting the areas we're focused on as an organization. For us, I think technology naturally is going to advance. There's so many unique things of payment methods and all these, you know, new things coming out. But again, a rural American business is not going to probably adapt that anytime soon. And so I would say for the industry itself, I think technology is going to be great for, you know, big metropolitans, et cetera, with all these unique ways of doing credit card processing. And I think for small businesses where we're focused on, for us, we're just trying to build out technology that's simplistic for them and allowing them to kind of get to that next level. So I would say that's futuristic for us specifically.
Great. And one fun question to finish off. What have you been watching or reading lately which you've enjoyed?
That's good. I love business movies. I think the last movie I just watched the other day was Air, kind of how Michael Jordan signed with Nike and, you know, how he was in love with Adidas.
Is that on Netflix or?
It's somewhere? On Amazon.
Okay.
Amazon. Yep. And it was a great story. And, you know, I love business stories, especially like that kind of changes or disrupts an industry, which that story did disrupt the industry of players being able to get royalties, et cetera. So I thought that was a great movie. The last kind of book I read or kind of lesson to is Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. And if you ever want to feel like a tiny person, like a bitch, you listen to that, because he was a very relentless man. And it made me feel like I'm not even doing enough. And I feel like I do so much, you know. And so that was a great book as well, to if you don't want to go on that route. So
fantastic. Well, I've been looking for something to watch, so I'm definitely going to watch Air. So thank you.
Great. No worries.
Well, thank you so much, Austin. That was really insightful, and loved learning about your company and what you're doing with your team. Sounds like you said earlier, tons of money in this space. And I love how you're attacking a very unique angle in the States, especially. So thank you and all the best in the future.
Yep. I appreciate having me and thinking of us.
No worries. Cheers.
All right. Thank you.